We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrand. Joining me, as always, over there in beautiful Chicago, Illinois, the one, the only, the illustrious, the incomparable, the man with the plan, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I'm good, but today's show is not about me.
Ooh.
It's about us, for sure. But it's not necessarily about your guy, Dan. I'm thrilled to be here today, as always. I actually took a shower for the occasion right before, so I would cleanse myself of the past and be as future-looking as I could possibly be. So I'm very excited for the show. We are continuing questions. We were sort of inundated with questions via all of our social platforms and email, and a lot of good ones came in a little after the horn from Tuesday's show. So we figured we'd answer a bunch of questions. But it's also a pretty big news day for the Solid Verbal, is it not?
It is indeed. We will get into our news here momentarily. A lot to report. We've been very busy this off season planning out all sorts of fun things for all y'all, which we're going to get into here momentarily. But before we do, don't forget, go on out to all of our social media platforms, those being Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, anywhere else. We're doing our best to grow the Solid Verbal footprint. Also go on out to solidverbal.com. More info on that. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Momentarily, where you can sign up for our newsletter. There's a big old yellow box there. If you can't get it to work there, or if you choose to go to a different URL, you can go to newsletter.solidverbal.com. You can also subscribe to the newsletter there. Also, more information coming on the newsletter. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Big news day here at SVHQ, Dan.
Yes, I would say so myself, yeah.
Why don't we just get into it? We have breaking news! So first and foremost, we should add that starting next week, we are going to switch up our cadence. You're only going to get two shows next week, but those two shows are going to be on Wednesday and Friday. And that is in preparation for our full blown switch to 3 episodes a week, which happens every year around this time. But starting next Friday, we are kicking things off with our ACC preview, the first of 2 ACC previews.
ACC and American Athletic Conference previews.
Strike me down. Strike me down.
Come on.
Also, talking about the AAC. We have broken all of the Power Five conferences into 2 shows. So each of the Power Five, they will have 2 different preview episodes. We're trying to split it up as best we can, give each division its due. Of course, the Big 12 is a little bit different. Being so, there's only 10 teams. We split that up accordingly as well. So as we get closer, we'll...
Double Texas preview.
We'll talk more about that. But for all intents and purposes, starting up next week, specifically next Friday, you will get your first crack at preview episodes from Dan and I and all things Solid Verbal. But Wednesday, Friday, and then heretofore, Dan, it will be Monday, Wednesday, Friday, all throughout the rest of the college football season.
Yeah, and let me emphasize, because you said Power 5 conferences, which is true, but the G5s are divisioned off as well. So
correct.
There is going to be, each episode is going to be a division of a Group of 5 conference and a division of a Power 5 conference. And I think sinking our teeth more than we ever have, I would say, into G5, not just in previewing, but the hope is the season at large. Obviously, some weeks it gets ahead of us, gets away from us, but I'm more excited, and I talked about this on Tuesday, the roster of quarterbacks returning for Group of Five teams has me particularly jazzed, Ty.
Yeah, so jazzed.
I'm as excited for G5 football as it's FBS football, but, and we'll talk independents, of course. We've worked them into the mix as well. So we have a lot of research and takes and big picture thoughts in the coming days, weeks, and months.
Breaking news drop two!
Boop, 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 boop.
Also, starting up next Friday, the much awaited, the much anticipated return of written, cool, fun content to solidverbal.com. So we did this long ago, back in the day. You wrote a piece called The Click Chorus.
Oh, you tried so hard to say that smoothly.
Which was every bit as immature as I think it was intended to sound.
Mm-hmm.
I had written some stuff for our website as well. Starting up next Friday, we have now actually taken a very real, very professional step to try and build out solidverbal.com. We brought on some folks. Remember, we had our writing trials, if you will, a few months back. We only had 3 slots, so hopefully at some point in the future we can expand and incorporate more, because we had a bunch of awesome writers who submitted their work to be part of the endeavor here. But starting up next Friday, that will be the grand reopening of editorial content on solidverbal.com. So that is all the more reason why you should go on out and subscribe to the newsletter, because we'll be sending it out there.
Yes.
But you can obviously find that on solidverbal.com, where we'll also be posting stuff to our social media feeds. And there'll be a big to-do around this content starting up on the website again on July the 23rd in tandem with the start of our previews.
Peek behind the curtain, our website has been able to handle written content for 3 hours. Yeah, but it's able.
It is able. It will be ready 1 week from tomorrow for those of you listening on Thursday.
Yes.
The 15th. And we are excited about this. It's an exciting next step for us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've got some really fun things planned. We're excited.
The breaking news!
Boop, 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 boop. Yeah.
That in our little Solid Verbal universe may actually break the news in a literal sense.
Yes. This is, is this the biggest piece of news as it relates to our show specifically? We've partnered with other places that, you know, everything has been really fun talking to other people. We've done all sorts of things to advance and grow the show successfully, I might add, and that I'm very proud of. But just within the confines of these audio walls, breaking news.
This is pretty big breaking news.
Yeah, floor is yours.
We have had all sorts of excitement along the way over the last decade plus of doing this podcast. And Dan, what is the first question that you and I get asked anytime we go out on the road? Anytime we open up the floor, frankly, for questions from the Verballerhood, be it in person or virtually, what is that first question that we get asked?
Are you going to shut down the show at the end of the 2021 season, as you've always promised? No.
Maybe. We could see how this goes.
The first question that's always asked, I think I might have... I scared 11 people by saying that. The first question we're always asked is, can you tell us what your secret day job is? What's your secret day job? Ty, what do you do when you're not broadcasting? What pays the bills? What's that mysterious day job?
What is the MDJ, Dan? What is the mysterious day job? Anytime I go out on the road, people want to know. We've kept it a relative mystery for the better part of the last decade now, decade plus of doing this show. I am pleased, I am excited, I am overjoyed to announce that starting today, literally today, Dan, July the 15th, 2021, the mysterious day job is no longer mysterious. The actual day job is now the Solid Verbal.
That is, I the warm fuzzies just erupted in my heart, Ty.
As of now, officially official, literally today, people use literally too much. No, literally today.
Literally
today was my last day at the previous mysterious day job.
Right.
And starting like right now, as people are listening to this, I am full-time Solid Verbal. And I am thrilled to be here. I honestly, when we started this, never thought it would get here.
Right.
But it finally came to a point where it's go big or go home.
Yeah.
And if we are serious about creating out this universe and making it as good as you and I both know it can be, it's going to require all hands on deck. And that certainly includes one of the founding members of the show, not just you. So here I am, man. You got me for the foreseeable future. Let's see what we can build.
I am a loss for words, which if anybody's listened to this show for a while, you know that's very difficult for me, but I'm at a loss for words. I am incredibly proud of you. I am incredibly overjoyed for what we're going to make. And it's not just this. It's not just what you're listening to. This is Solid Verbal Media. This is expanding this universe. This is partnering with people to make new shows, empowering people that shows that we are not on. Like the possibilities are pretty endless. We've had a lot of interest in doing things like this and in expanding this universe, and we haven't been fully able to do it. And it's not just because of your day job. I had a long time full-time gig as well. It just happened to be in sports media, but we have had to turn down opportunities because I was unable to because of that job. And so now we are fully unencumbered. And I have had opportunities since leaving that job that I have no intention of pursuing anymore because this is where my heart is. This is where my ass is, Ty. It's in this chair making a show and making a thing with you and the people we make these things with.
So it's very exciting. It's a long time coming. When we started this back in 2008, I had always hoped that maybe could get to this point, but just couldn't see the path. Here we are. Mm-hmm. And with all
I have a question for you, though.
Oh, please.
What was the mysterious day job?
Well, it's funny you should ask, Dan, because...
Okay.
I'm not going to yell it again. I need to try and preserve the pipes now. This is what I do for a living. Please excuse me.
Yeah.
But if you go on out to our Patreon, verballers.com, as of noon Eastern... on July the 15th, when many of you are listening to this show, we will be making our updated Patreon benefit tiers live. Now, look, this is not me shilling for money.
Listen.
But
it kind of is.
In light of the news that we just shared, Patreon support is now a little bit more important to keeping the lights on than it was previously. So,
oh, it definitely is, yeah.
Go on out, again, noon Eastern time, July the 15th, Thursday. If you are interested or just if you're curious about what we have to offer, your support is very much encouraged, very much appreciated. And starting on July the 16th, tomorrow,
yes,
we're going to be dropping a show where we go into painstaking detail about that mysterious day job. We're going to demystify at long last the MDJ.
Whoa.
We're going to talk it through. You're going to interview me about what's going on. And we're just going to fully steer into this as a cornerstone of the Solid Verbal community and talk it through. That is a Patreon only show.
Yeah, no, I know you're a little bit bashful about it, but this is what we do. This is the bread and butter. This is the 9 to 5. And it really is more like, I don't know, 7 to 8 or something like that. A lot of days just in terms of when we're studying 5 a.m. during the season. And so we really do need your support. We do, to not just keep the lights on, but just keep doing the show, keep building the show. And, you know, I think the benefits are pretty terrific. And if I can be frank, I'm pretty pumped to do some of the things that we have down there that we've never done. But we found that the majority of people who are supporting us on Patreon, they just like the show and they happen to like the way that we make shows. And so they want to support that. So if that's you, you don't have to, but it would be really cool.
It would be very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, that's it.
If you decide that you want to support, again, it's verballers.com for more information on how to get involved, how to support the show. You can get access to the MDJ demystification special that is going to drop again at 6 a.m. on Friday. But look, I am thrilled. I am now full-time Solid Verbal. If there are anybody out there looking for help on podcast projects or consultation or anything like that, I can talk more about that. And maybe what are some of the additional plans I have for myself now beyond just doing this. But this is obviously going to be the focal point of my day to day.
You've actually turned out, by the way, you've turned down opportunities for that in the past.
I have. And I don't want to turn those down anymore. I don't want to turn those down anymore because the podcasting medium is just so damn exciting right now. And
right.
So if there's opportunity out there, if people need help, if they need some consultation, whatever, hit me up, solidverbal@gmail.com. I'd love to have a discussion. But for the here and now, the focal point is where we're taking the Solid Verbal, where we're taking this little media universe that you and I are trying to build. I'm excited. Let's do it.
Spicy.
Let's do it. Let's get to those emails, though. We had an overflowing inbox, Dan.
Yes.
Congratulations, Skippy. You've got mail.
You've got mail on the Solid Verbal.
Just as we did on Tuesday, we're going to do our best now to pay homage to the Verballerhood, many of whom wrote in on plain old-fashioned email, solidverbal@gmail.com. We also had questions on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, on Reddit. Where else? Discord, of course, to the Patreon community.
Course.
We're trying to really tap into the aura that is the Verballerhood, Dan. Where do we want to go? This is a continuation of the show that we did on Tuesday, as I slap my microphone here because I'm all excited.
Right.
Where do we want to go? Because we have a long list of questions that we did not get through.
Vic wants to know, if Arkansas were in the Big 12 right now, how many wins would they have and where would they rank among Big 12 programs? This was, by the way, something floated by, I believe it was David Ubben, that's saying, sure, everybody should love to be in either the Big 10 or SEC, but for a program like Arkansas with its roots, obviously, in the Southwest Conference, Ty, a little conference you might be familiar with, and you know the alignment with the Texas schools historically, that perhaps Arkansas would have a higher profile program. I believe that was the gist.
Right.
It was a few weeks old. So what do you think the status of Arkansas would be as a Big 12 program?
Well, I mean, It's hard for me to separate out the progress that Sam Pittman made in year one in Fayetteville from what I know is just a total banger of a schedule. It's really going to be hard for Arkansas.
I think this is just more big picture. Like what would your perception be of Arkansas as a Big 12 team, given the power of their current division and given the sort of all over the place nature, a conference in the Big 12 that has seen a number of teams bubble to the national surface, most recently Iowa State, but we've had, you know, Baylor and TCU, obviously Texas, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. These are all teams in playoff or national championship conversations in the last, what, decade? Oklahoma State, that was a 2011 season where they lost to Iowa State. So
yep.
there's there's a lot more of an inevitability
sure.
to the SEC than there is to the Big 12.
100%. And by the way, we'll get an early read on this because Arkansas does play Texas. That was a game that I talked about in week two.
Sure.
Where Arkansas is only a 3.5-point dog. So look, I don't think that line is right, but if that's any indication, Vegas feels pretty okay about how Arkansas would do if it played against some of the better teams in the Big 12. What right. I talked about on Tuesday's show, because we had a question about where does TCU rank? Is TCU in any position to mount a dark horse campaign for the Big 12? I think the answer to that is no, because I think TCU falls into like that five spot.
Right.
In the Big 12, there are four teams that I'd be inclined to put above them. I think you could put Arkansas kind of in that discussion. What I like about Arkansas is that they bring a lot back. I think
so. But everybody
like,
does this year.
Everybody does this year. Yeah. And that's because of circumstances a year ago.
But for a young program, by young, I mean a second-year head coach. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
For sure. 19 returning starters from a year ago for Arkansas. I feel like they could. And the other thing about them is they play really hard. We saw that last year. You know, that's a thing for me.
Sure.
I like teams that fight to the end. And Sam Pittman had Arkansas in a lot of those games. So mm-hmm. I would be inclined to put them middle of the pack in the Big 12 going into the 2021 season if roles were somewhat reversed. I still don't know if I'm putting them above certainly the top tier of that division or that conference, excuse me, the likes of Oklahoma, the likes of Texas. Like, it's just, I don't think it's there yet, but right. I think they're solidly middle of the pack, and I think they play hard. They fight every team tooth and nail.
It's fascinating to think about how expectations among boosters and fans and administrators is like, whereas in the SEC West, I think they're largely tempered because everybody basically has to say, okay, well, we have, you know, there's a Goliath, there's an elephant, a literal elephant sometimes. So there used to be a littler elephant, I think, on Alabama's campus. But there is an elephant in the SEC West room where Arkansas has the expectation of being a winning program. And a good winning program, but there's probably a ceiling. It's what it seems right now, barring any sort of five-star no-brainer quarterback who is like a hog legacy or for whatever reason, not to put this down, but like those types of players aren't necessarily gravitating towards Fayetteville. So in the Big 12, all of the sudden, in what we perceive, even though Oklahoma has dominated it, to be a little more wide open of a conference, I think the expectations are raised. So then maybe there's more money going into the program from boosters or anything like that, but it's also a situation where you got to win quicker than you have to win in the SEC. So it's, you know, there's a lot of different angles to it, but I think with the talent Arkansas could attract and the size of a program that it is and the expectations and the focus that the program receives, I would say that they should be a perennial 8-win program in the Big 12. Now, right now, they're playing 8 conference games. In the Big 12, they'd be playing 9. So, or that's what they're playing right now. So, whatever. You're going through a weird exercise here where you're adding a team to the Big 12, but that's where they're at right now. No. But I think from a pure competitive standpoint, Arkansas would be good in the Big 12. I don't know if it gets them necessarily closer to a playoff conversation, but now that we have 12, everybody's closer to the playoff conversation. But I don't know if they're able to build a team to compete with the best of the nation. But I think it's an interesting thought exercise.
It's an interesting thought exercise. And again, I'll use the early Vegas lines as something of an indicator because we saw where Texas was relative to a team like TCU. The mm-hmm. early line is that TCU is favored by 1.5 over Texas. Now, I don't agree with that.
Right.
But if you extrapolate out where Arkansas would be on that same scale, being so Arkansas is a 3.5 dog against Texas, what that tells me is that Vegas would have TCU favored by 5 points over Arkansas.
Right.
I think what I get out of that is that Vegas would have Arkansas within a touchdown of probably everybody in the Big 12 with the exception of Oklahoma. So they're certainly in the conversation. It's a weird thought exercise. Mind you, I get it. But
right.
at least within the confines of 2021 here, I think it means they'd be competitive in that conference.
The fascinating thing is if you go back to the best recent Arkansas team, which I believe was 2014, It was a team that, I mean, they were like a 7-6 team, whatever Arkansas's record was when they had that, if you remember, incredible defense. They shut out both Ole Miss and LSU, I believe. And they, the Alabama game was something like 13-12, 12-11. Like, it was a really, really tight game. That was at the time that TCU and Baylor were playing 61-58 games. So if we are going to fully extrapolate this, this thought process, this thought experiment, what does Arkansas look like relative to the top of the Big 12 that season, the first year of the playoff? That's kind of fascinating. That they were a bruiser of a team that nobody wanted any part of, especially in the back half of that year. I think that was was that the borderline erotic bowl?
That's correct.
That's to me is really interesting. The contrast that we did see these, I mean, not last year, but the couple of years before that, Baylor have tremendous success with, to sort of zag in a conference that hadn't fully zagged from its normal zig with the focus on defense and ball control, which Baylor succeeded doing. So, no, it's fascinating, but does Chad Morris have a lot of success with Arkansas in the Big 12? Probably not.
Yeah.
Probably not. So they're still running into some of those same issues.
Where are we going next here?
You tell me. You're the big news tie here.
Big news tie. Yeah. This is the big news show on the Solid Verbal. TJ wants to know if it's going to be Dino Babers last year at Syracuse. TJ, a longtime listener of the Solid Verbal.
Right.
What up, TJ? What can Dino realistically do to save himself? All right, so I have two questions about this. First off, how much of a quick hook does Syracuse have / should they have if they're being realistic about their football program? And I don't mean that in a demeaning way, but it is Syracuse, where there's not a whole lot of recent success to hang your hat on. And secondly, if not Dino, then who? Where would you go if not Dino Babers? I happen to like Dino Babers a great deal. What does he have to do? I think he has to show some sort of forward momentum. They are still kind of digging out from the grungy Eric Dungy years. And by digging out, I mean trying to reestablish themselves, trying to plant a new tent pole around which they can build, around which they can establish some momentum. That has not happened yet. So what are your thoughts here?
I think it's just sort of a dollars and cents thing. I'm seeing this right now. The buyout, this is as of last fall. Babers reportedly, this is from dailyorange.com, Babers reportedly has 4 years remaining on a contract extension he signed 2 years ago, and a buyout could cost more than $17 million. Wildhack, John Wildhack, former ESPN higher-up, who is now running the Syracuse Athletic Department, said he and Babers will meet after this season and evaluate what went wrong, as they do every year. So even if that buyout is coming down, has come down, you know, maybe there's a clause that, you know, as of January 1 or whatever, if he's still the coach, even if it has come down, it's probably in the double digits. And now is not an amazing time for a very down program, as Syracuse has become since their success a couple years ago, to cut that kind of check. So, man, if they are a disaster once again, and I always look to the side of the ball where the head coach has history, fair or not, and his offensive history, and they talked about, you know, playing with pace and like a power spread, we're going to go deep, but then we're going to hit people with the eye, and like it just hasn't worked. They're like, last year's defense showed some signs of life, and I like the hire coordinator they made there, but even still, there, you look to recruiting for potential energy in the future, and that hasn't necessarily been there lately. So what would it take? I mean, anything short of a bowl game, I think there's a good chance that he is looking for a new gig. But man, it's a big, big check to cut. It's a big check.
That's a lot.
He had recent success, but if there's any element of Syracuse football that, and I like this word a lot, is a calamity this fall in the way that their offense has been. And I know they've been snake bitten and they were missing players. And I think the excuses will be less so this year in terms of how, you know, meaningful those excuses are. But if it's just a disaster on offense once again, I don't know what there is beyond the cash you would owe him to say, we got to keep this thing going.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Let's go to Alec. This is a question that I feel like we've addressed in some way, shape, or form.
Okay.
Over the last couple months, but it's a good thought experiment. We're really just we're using the bean today, Dan. Got a lot going on. We're excited. Let's talk about potential Nick Saban replacements if and when
he decides.
What's
changed? And has anything changed in your mind this offseason
about
Nick Saban's long-term viability? Viability is the wrong word, but his long-term plan and who might replace him?
No. No, I mean, nobody to me gives me a great answer.
Okay.
And I guess the most obvious would be, well, here's the question. So the question is, with Sark off to Texas, with Dabo entrenched at Clemson, is Mario Cristobal the favorite to replace Nick Saban someday? The question might not be answered for some time with Saban's new contract, but I can't decide if I think he'll make it all the way to 2029. It's 2029, 8 years from now. How old is Saban going to be? In that case, is he going to be like 80 years old or close to it?
You're saying 2029?
I can't decide if I think he'll make it all the way to 2029. Yeah, that was Alex's question.
So Nick Saban is currently 69 years old.
Okay.
His birthday's on Halloween. So in 2029, if my math works, so he's turning 70 this year. So in 8 years, he'll be 78 years old.
78 years old.
Yeah.
Okay.
During the season, he'll be turning 78. Yeah.
Saban could make it to 78 as head coach of Bama.
Could.
Because the program's clearly at critical mass at this point. It recruits itself. I'm not saying it's easy to maintain this level of just incredible production.
Quality and,
Yeah, everything about it's nearly impossible on any other context. But because he has shown such a proclivity to bring in new assistants year over year, maintain that high production, he's a guy who could do it. He could do it, and I don't think it would be any just greater feat than we've already seen. So it's possible that he could stick around. But let's go through the exercise. Nick Saban announces, let's say, 2 years from now that he's retiring. Dabo Swinney presumably is going to continue his glide path at Clemson because recruiting has been strong. Let's also give Sark benefit of the doubt. Let's give Mario Cristobal benefit of the doubt because recruiting has been strong at Oregon as well. And let's assume Sark can...
More difficult for sure at Oregon to recruit a top five class than it is in Tuscaloosa, but yes, correct.
So I guess my question would be if you are Alabama and you know that there is a tie-in with Dabo Swinney, isn't he your first call?
Probably, but, we're not privy to the relationship behind the scenes between, the AD and Dabo and the moneyed people in Dabo and seeing as how they clash in national championships and what they think the optics are of going after him to lead your program after battling. And I know Saban and Dabo are pretty friendly and they have vacation together. But I almost don't think we know the name yet. Like, I don't think, like, I think Alabama, in the way that, you know, Rich Rod was that up and comer and obviously wasn't hired way back in 2007, but it's going to be somebody probably on the younger side who's proven an ability to win big and recruit really well. I don't know if it's Lincoln Riley, because I think the Oklahoma job is a pretty uniquely amazing position, but I think it's going to be somebody on the younger side. And, you know, if it's Mario Cristobal, who is, you know, younger, but not that young, that's an impossible job. And so
right.
Mario Cristobal has, or Mario, as it were, has a pretty amazing path to the postseason right now in the Pac-12 as it's currently constituted. Maybe USC eventually hires a killer and Washington, you know, has a, you know, whether it's a Jimmy Lake or somebody else, and I don't know, whatever the path, maybe it gets increasingly difficult. But traditionally, it's only been one or two teams at the top of the Pac-12, not a situation like where the SEC has, you know, up LSU years and up Florida years and up Georgia years and up Auburn years. So whoever it is has to know that they're going to make $10 million a year, and whatever happens, happens. Because following Saban is just, you're setting yourself up for failure. So, you know, if that's, I mean, I am not saying it's going to be a coach who only is doing it for the cash, but that's going to be an element of knowing you're set up to fail, given the expectations, the otherworldly, unprecedented expectations in Tuscaloosa. So, you know, it's probably not going to be somebody like Ryan Day, probably not going to be somebody like Lincoln Riley. I really do believe that it's going to be a name of somebody that is currently 38 to 44.
Okay.
And okay, whether that's Matt Campbell, whether that's my guy Jeff Hafley,
your boy,
you know, like I think it's going to be from that generation of coaches, and whoever ends up looking like the sort of top of that pyramid, I think that's who is ultimately going to get that gig. But I think there's going to be more wariness than expected, yeah, because of the job Nick Saban has done getting everybody in line in Tuscaloosa and in the Alabama football universe behind him, that he's able to exceed expectations almost. It's just whoever gets that job is going to be fired.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you need to go super youthful with that selection.
Well, by then they won't be youthful. I'm saying right now they're like 38 to 44.
Right, but I'm saying 2 years. Let's say 2 or 3 years from now. I don't know.
Sure.
Hypothetically speaking. Yeah. I don't think you need to go crazy young with your coaching selection. I think you need to have somebody in place who you know can continue the momentum. That's the most important thing, because they have, again, achieved this incredible success over the last decade under Saban that I think they are more than anything just craving to maintain at that point. And so I think it's a guy who's got familiarity with Nick Saban and how he went about things. You're trying to keep continuity in place as much as possible.
Right.
Whether that's a guy like a Sark, maybe you go back after him. Maybe that's a guy like a Mario Cristobal who's been on the staff. Lord knows pretty much everybody's been on the staff.
But see, I don't think a lot of guys who end up leaving Tuscaloosa by their own choice, because that's what ends up happening a lot of the time, because they have this shine on them from coaching at Alabama. I don't know how many of them actually look back fondly at their time at Alabama.
Yeah. I mean, it's if they were being responsible about it, and if Nick Saban was talking to leadership about what his own exit strategy is,
right,
presumably they could go the route of naming the coach in waiting and work on that transition plan gradually over the course of time. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know where Saban's at. But
sure,
I would hope that for Alabama's sake, Nick Saban would have that plan in motion. Because he's a guy who, he's a planful guy, Dan. This is a man with a plan for sure. So I'm guessing he's given it some thought. Maybe he's got some suitors in mind. And I would hope for
Tosh LuPoy.
I would hope for the sake of the Bama program that they would have some sort of succession plan that they could enact. But it's an interesting thought experiment. My guess is that we'll have that conversation many, many times over
right
before it actually comes to fruition. Why don't we stay in the SEC, Dan? This is a good question from Miller Time, Dan.
Miller Time. Yep.
Why do so many assume that LSU will automatically rebound to a New Year's Six level in 2021? I get the talent and experience, but LSU has finished with 10 or more wins and a top 12 ranking just twice in the last 7 years. And they are breaking in two young first-time coordinators. 2019 and even 2018 are outliers. This feels like, ooh, this stings. This feels like Gene Chizik 2.0, Dan.
Oh, come on.
Ooh.
Everybody's so quick to compare a situation to Gene Chizik or, oh, man, who's the other coach that, who's the, oh, God, now I'm blanking on his name, the Miami coach who followed Butch Davis, who was out after a few years, just couldn't keep it going.
Oh, Larry.
Coker.
Larry.
Yeah,
Larry Coker. Thank you.
Everybody's very quick. Next Coker.
Interesting. Common ground, though, here. Neither Gene Chizik nor Ed Orgeron have any sideburns.
Is that true? Ed Orgeron's are as short as Chizik's?
I believe. Now, Gene Chizik had negative sideburns, which isn't really...
Yeah, Gene Chizik was up at eye level. Coach O's sideburn situation, it's not... Yeah, it's similar. Not as pronounced. Maybe that's a head shape thing, but it's similar. You're right.
So, for what it's worth... In a battle royale, I take Coach O over Gene Chizik.
Okay.
No doubt about it. Mm-hmm. The sideburns are comparable. And clearly, we're at a stage now with LSU football in the wake of the Joe Burrow era, in the wake of the Joe Brady era, in the wake of 2020 and the uncertainty, where, you know, there is some question around where is this thing headed? I think recruiting has still been strong. I think there's a lot of reason to be optimistic. It feels like they started to pull it together down the stretch last season with Max Johnson in there at quarterback. But Gene Chizik 2.0, Dan, that is, that cuts to the bone, right?
It does. Gene Chizik made some pretty bad hires after losing Gus Malzahn and took the offense in a not great place, but recruited pretty well. The problem with that comparison is Ed Orgeron quickly made the change, and he has not the greatest track record of finding coaches on either side of the ball, coordinators on either side of the ball, that just weren't fits for a 10-win season. And even though, you know, Matt Canada's offense at LSU had its moments, it wasn't a fit with Ed Orgeron. And then following Joe Brady was going to be pretty impossible, but the combination of a newish look offense, it wasn't that new look, but it was, you know, there were new ideas in that offense and quarterback injuries and rawness to the quarterback position. I thought Miles Brennan was pretty good. The defense was a nightmare against Mississippi State to open the year. So if the defense comes back to anywhere near where it should be, given the talent level and given the schedule this year, I mean, you can stop me when I get to a quarterback that legitimately scares you.
Right,
UCLA,
right.
McNeese, Central Michigan. I think that's kind of scary. Just because McElwain's doing a pretty good job there, but I'm not worried. It's at LSU. Auburn, Kentucky, Florida, Ole Miss. Yeah, that's a quarterback that should scare you. Matt Corral, and it's on the road. We'll see about Bryce Young and the quarterback situation. Tuscaloosa, but we don't know yet. Arkansas, Monroe, A&M. So right now, the number of proven scary quarterbacks in LSU's schedule isn't all that high right now. And I think there's just a general assumption that the mistakes, given everything that goes into the program and given the guys that they got recommendations from regarding these new coordinators, I think there's just this assumption that the injury luck is going to bounce back. You know, Derek Stingley was dealing with he was hospitalized the night before that Mississippi State game. Like, there were key dudes who were dealing with some really serious stuff. So I think there is just that assumption that even if LSU traditionally is not winning 10, 11 games a year, that given where they are as compared to the changes and newness of the rest of the SEC, that LSU is in a pretty good spot. They've got one of the best receivers in the country to me in Keyshawn Boutte. And I think there's opportunity there for a poor man's 2019. Is that 9 wins? Is it 11? I don't know. But I think we're going to see notes of it on both sides of the ball. And we know Dave Aranda is an incredible defensive coordinator. And, you know, matching what he was able to do at LSU is going to be very difficult. But it's a really nice starting point considering the two deep on that defense. So I don't think the same mistakes will be made on defense, and I think they will be healthier on offense, which I think leads to a certain degree of optimism.
I thought we had a blanket policy on this show that whenever you said Dave Aranda's name, you had you had to use the Lego Batman voice.
Dave Aranda.
Thank you. Look, there is some, I think, real discussion to be had around where LSU goes from here. Mm-hmm. Remember what the conversation was going into that incredible once-in-a-generation season that they had, where they ran the table and won the championship, and Joe Burrow went on to the Heisman Trophy and the first overall draft pick. Do you remember what the conversation was going into that season? The conversation was, we got to fix this offense.
Right.
And the conversation was, maybe Joe Brady can do it. And
right.
perhaps Ed Orgeron is self-aware enough as a coach to realize the error in his ways, the flaws of his system, and he's going to go out and he's going to try and get better on offense. Now, that worked beautifully, obviously.
But it's a bit of a cry wolf situation, because what do we hear every August from every camp? Oh, this guy, like, this guy succeeded at the Manning Passing Academy.
Thank you.
We're really going to open it up this fall. That's why we joke about new coordinators, new strength coaches.
The aggressive attacking mentality
right.
on defense.
So it's really hard to parse, you know, if you can get practice reports behind the scenes and not necessarily writers saying, you know, sort of just printing what coaches are saying without offering, you know, better sourcing. It's really hard to believe what is actually true and what's not until the live bullets start flying.
That's 100% the case. And that's my point here with Orgeron.
Yeah.
So we definitely caught lightning in a bottle the year with Joe Burrow when they won everything and they were all world everything and they were incredible. Once in a generation, no doubt
sure.
about it.
Going to play, no doubt about it. Going to play with tempo.
But right. But much the way the next guy after Saban has a incredible, impossible act to follow, I feel like we're kind of in that territory now with LSU.
Right.
How do you build upon that once-in-a-generation season? They've got some momentum from it, but it's a tough act to follow. And I fear for Ed Orgeron that no matter how well they do, if they don't live up to that billing, mm-hmm. it's going to leave fans underwhelmed because
sure.
it's so close in the rearview mirror. So I don't know. I think there is a real likelihood that there's a solid bounce back from some uncertainty a year ago, but it's just not enough to appease the fan base. And that's what I worry about. I root for LSU. I root for Coach O, but I feel like that is a probability at this point, just given how high the heights were a couple seasons ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically, we're going to come down, if there's not a special situation at quarterback with LSU, we're going to be having similar conversations as to what we had in 2013, 14, whatever, where it's how long can they go 9-3 and keep Coach O?
There it is. Okay.
How long can they keep going 9-3? And, you know, that might become the question. Or, I mean, until they get to Bama, all of those games on paper are winnable. And then after Bama, it's Arkansas at home, Monroe at home, A&M at home.
No. Okay. Let's go to Christoph. For our purposes here, can we just assume it is Ed Harris's character in The Truman Show?
Always. That's where I was going with it.
Wearing the backwards beret. Let's just mm-hmm. assume it's the same Christoph. He says, next year, James Franklin
Harris.
Is at USC.
Okay.
Matt Campbell's at Michigan. Luke Fickell is at Penn State. Who has the most success going forward, let's say by 2025. So this pretty big coaching carousel here.
Sure.
If Franklin goes to USC, which has been rumored for a long time, I don't know if that happens. I don't think Franklin's the right move for USC, if I'm being honest. Recruiting talent is not their problem. That's what Franklin does well, but that's a separate conversation.
He's hired good coordinators, though.
He's hired good coordinators, sure.
I enjoyed the work of Shoup and Brent Pry.
Okay.
And Joe Moorhead, yeah.
Okay, fine. That's a separate conversation. Franklin goes to USC. Campbell goes to Michigan. Luke Fickell's at Penn State. Who mm-hmm. has the most success going forward? Let's say by 2025.
Only one of those teams has Ohio State in their division. So there's the roadblock element.
Well,
two of those teams. Excuse me. Michigan and Penn State. I would probably say James Franklin at USC has the most success.
I think I would agree with that as well.
I don't believe USC, I mean, they have annual Notre Dame, but they haven't scheduled any big headline September games against Power 5 opponents. You know, I don't believe there's any sort of Texas, Alabama, no. Michigan, any of those kinds of matchups on their non-conference slate over these next few years. So that's a nice element for your final record.
My
Luke Fickell at Penn State, I think, would succeed, and I think Matt Campbell at Michigan would succeed.
I think they'd all do well. Roadblock.
Yeah.
I think they'd all do well. The problem with a question like this, and we get 1,000 of them every time we open up the inbox,
mm-hmm.
if you're looking 4 years down the line, you have to play a logical, a probability game.
Mm-hmm.
And that game is exactly what you said. Who has the fewest landmines? The answer is USC. USC has a built-in talent advantage being in Southern California. If they brought James Franklin over, they would clearly have a very gifted recruiter. Say what you mm-hmm. want about Franklin. He may not be the best inside 2 minutes. The dude can recruit.
No, he recruits and hires really well.
He recruits and he hires really well. And so that would be an attractive spot if you are a top recruit to go and play for Franklin in LA. Fewer landmines for sure. I think Matt Campbell will be great at Michigan. I think Luke Fickell will be fine wherever he went, be it Penn State or anywhere else. But
mm-hmm.
for sure, the fewest landmines to success in 2025, definitely USC.
Okay, but there's the expectation at all three of those programs, especially if the playoff goes to 12 in 2023, that these teams consistently are in or near the playoff.
Yeah.
That they should be nothing less than top 12-ish annually, right?
Yeah, no, for sure.
Considering the advantages that Michigan, USC, and Penn State have. So, yes, Ohio State is a roadblock, and USC in the conference only really appears to have one major national-ish roadblock, which is Oregon, and that's on the other side of the conference. Michigan has work to do, but if they only lose to Ohio State, they'll make the playoff every year.
Right, right.
If they lose to Penn State and Ohio State, it's trickier, but there will be years where they're in that playoff conversation, and they should do no worse than, you know, splitting every, you know, winning every other year against each other, Penn State and Michigan, given how strong those programs could be with the right coach. So we're still talking about the best of all three of those guys being a playoff caliber team. I just think right now, given what the divisions look like, because if Luke Fickell's at Penn State and Matt Campbell's at Michigan, they're playing each other. So if they're hitting their ceilings as well, that's a really tough division, along with Ryan Day and Ohio State, presuming he's still there. So I have more faith that the Big Ten East will be more difficult to navigate long term.
Yeah, I agree with that.
With those three coaches.
I agree with that.
Than what the Pac-12 South's outlook is, which is...
Beware of Jed Fish. Everyone's talking about Jed Fish.
He's actually recruiting pretty well, all things considered. Like, there is decent energy in Tucson, but things are uncertain right now in Tempe, considering some of the allegations. We know Kyle Whittingham is going to field a very good team more often than not, but that generally has a December ceiling. And I guess we'll wait and see on Colorado, but I don't think the expectations are super high there. So, yeah, I think a USC, even at 89.2% capacity, is winning the South every year. Right?
You know why this question is moot from the jump?
Why?
Because we agreed several months ago, Clay Helton's going to coach forever. He's never true. Getting fired at USC.
Oh, man.
Folks, he's never getting fired at USC.
Right.
Never.
Well, I mean, the big problem with USC is just full university buy-in with football. That's
full university buy-in with football. Sure. But he's never getting fired. I hope people realize that.
Good.
It's never going to happen.
Thrilled.
Where do we want to go next? You get the pick.
Kyle wants to know what college football game this year would you advise that I plan my bachelor party around attending? Please factor in location, game hype, accessibility, and tailgating. Context, I'm a Notre Dame alum living in New York. I'd prefer to do a Notre Dame game, but I'm struggling to find a home weekend that works with my schedule due to weddings and other obligations. I work broadly in higher education. A lot of my job involves visiting university campuses, which I love. So I'm considering opening it up to any college football game. Would love to hear your thoughts. Just go to whatever Texas game you want.
go to Notre Dame, Wisconsin in Chicago.
That's pretty good. You got to go. It's late September, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So
September 25th,
my sales pitch. My sales pitch with Chicago is it could be really nice in late September. You never know, though. Could be really nice. If you want to go out on a lake, there's a lake right there.
It's easy to get to.
Slap in the city.
He's in New York City.
Very easy to get to.
So it's a quick flight over to Chicago. It should be pretty nice in Chicago end of September.
Yeah.
You're not talking snow flurries.
So the only problem with it is you're not going to a college town.
You're not going to a college town, but he said that he works broadly in higher education and his job involves visiting university campuses. So maybe he doesn't feel the need to scratch that itch to go to a campus to watch a game. Go to Soldier Field. Go to Soldier Field. Notre Dame, Wisconsin. Done deal.
You can go to breweries. You can play golf if you want to golf. You can eat crazy well in Chicago. You can see Notre Dame, Wisconsin, which legitimately should be a very good game. You know, the only down part is it might be blustery, which is never the most fun thing.
Is it that blustery, though, at the end of September in Chicago?
Ty, it's the windy city.
Okay. True.
I think that's a reference to politics, but it is the windy city. I'm a big fan of Chicago, but I could see why Chicago is not the most popular destination for bachelor parties.
That's also a good point. But I'm just saying, if you're a Notre Dame alum, if you're living in New York, if you already have your fill of college campuses, go to someplace easy to get to. You know, it's a big game. Notre Dame, Wisconsin should be a big game. The Jack Cohn Bowl. We're very excited about the Jack Cohn Bowl here at the Solid Verbal. Mm-hmm. Go to Chicago. Get Dan, cook him a pizza. You'll do that.
Plentiful
for his bachelor
hotels.
Party.
Well, he's got a whole bachelor party. It's not just one pizza.
You just cook one pizza. Here. One pizza. Everybody gets a slice.
Oh, man. Yeah, I always like going somewhere warm with a bachelor party.
Well, you're from California.
There's nothing. Yeah, Arizona is a nice bachelor party destination, but I don't think there's a huge, huge game going on. And Arizona in September is still really, really hot. But yeah, if you want to get out on some water and if you want to golf, you can do that most places. If you want to eat well, you can do that most places. And if seeing Notre Dame football is important to him, and maybe he went to Notre Dame and has a bunch of Notre Dame buddies, so it's important to that group.
Yeah, exactly.
It makes sense.
Go to Chicago. Late September, Notre Dame, Wisconsin. That'll be a great tailgating scene, right? I would think that'd be an amazing tailgating scene.
I have no idea what the parking lot is like around Soldier Field. It's never the same inside of a city in terms of room and energy. But
True. But that's a weekend.
You'll eat well.
You can eat well. You can plan around that game. Let's go one or two more.
Goose Island. There's a brewery on an island in the middle of the city.
Goose Island. Yeah, I got the IPA downstairs. All right. Let's go one more football, and then I want to ask my Shohei Ohtani question.
Oh, okay. You have David. A lot of what I would consider to be problematic Shohei Ohtani thoughts, but we'll get there.
Okay. Do I? Cool.
No.
Where do we want to go
just
next?
Just a very topical thing to say. Let's see. What opinion about the sport has changed as you got older? That's from D. Smith.
What up, D. Smith?
What opinion about the sport has changed as you got older? I've talked about my postseason thing where...
Yeah, that's the worst
I'm
opinion.
Wistful.
It's the worst opinion you've ever had, but I still
it's
love
fantastic.
You.
Fantastic. And
people
now
I am
around.
Now my success is tied to your success, so I have to try and be nice to you about it, which I'll continue to do. I grew up with a mother who was a lifelong educator.
Mm-hmm.
Taught school for 30 some odd years before retiring. And so much of my programming as a lad, as a Ute, as a developing college football fan was around the value of a scholarship and that a scholarship was good enough. A scholarship should be good enough for some of these student athletes moving on, playing at the next level. They should be proud to have that scholarship.
It has value.
Yeah. That opinion for me has drastically changed over the years that I've been doing this show, that we've been doing this show together.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not going to act like we're privy to any kind of advanced intel or we see the world through a different lens now that we're doing this show. Maybe that's a little bit true, but I just feel like over the course of time, as you see these $1 billion deals that are being signed by networks to cover the games, as you
shoe companies with the schools. Yeah. Some huge ones.
Yeah. I mean, And I think more importantly, as maybe the closer you get to this, the more you realize how much these institutions own, truly own these student athletes. Every waking moment is given to the program, given to the to the football institution at those respective schools. My opinion has changed on what the value of that scholarship really is. And so I have gone from, I think, just kind of being a hive mind with Mama H and feeling that the scholarship should be good enough, to now going completely in the opposite direction, full bore NIL, full bore, let's get these kids get paid somehow, some way, and cash in on their name, image, likeness. So that for me, I think is it's got to be the answer.
I used to love night games. Oh, did I love, like, I couldn't even tell you the channels on the West Coast, like Prime Ticket, Fox Sports West.
Okay.
Shout out Petros Papadakis and Steve Fizioc, Ted Robbins, all those guys. I hate them.
Not anymore?
I hate them so much that now that I am in the Central Time Zone and was in the Eastern Time Zone and now have two small children that wake up early.
Pac-12 After Dark is Pac-12 Dan's in bed.
Yeah, it's pack it in for me. That's wake up early and watch it then. I love night games because on the West Coast, the primetime game is, what, a 5:15 kickoff? The, you know, Fowler Herb Street ESPN game. That was great. I could
pack it in.
You order an early dinner. And I hate, like, even there is even something about, and this is a me thing, this is a me old man thing, I'm not trying to project this on anybody else, but even an Oregon game that starts at 8 o'clock Central Time Zone, somewhere in that vicinity, 7:38, I roll my eyes. And it's just because I'm ancient and washed up. But to me, that also says if it's on a major network that we're getting a long halftime, it feels that way anyway with the commercial breaks. And I'm rolling with that game until 11:30, 12:00. And that's not my preference.
Pack it up, pack it in.
My West Coast college football viewing career loved a good night game. So that's what's changed with me.
We've grown.
But now also, and if you remember from, I don't know, three, four years ago, Chris Peterson's comments about road night games and how much it affects the just the full week schedule because now they're not getting home until the next day or in the middle of the night. And it's just in terms of consideration for scheduling, it's a wrench for teams. That doesn't affect my opinion of it. It's all selfishly how it affects me. And that's what's changed. I used to love them. Attending, you know, watching, whatever.
One other thing that I'll throw in very quickly, and then I want to get to my Shohei Ohtani question from David.
Please, sure.
Maybe the best question we've ever been asked. I used to like lionize the ability to watch or the ability to have like six TVs on at once, six TVs at once watching college football.
Right.
Maybe I'm like too ADD for my own good.
Sure.
I can really only deal with one TV at this point.
You're monogamous.
And maybe Twitter. Maybe Twitter on a second screen to just see what people are.
You'll flirt.
People are reacting to.
Yeah.
All right.
I can make two TVs work.
I can make it work, but I can really only pay attention to one.
Eventually, I'm going to be a homeowner, and it is going to be my attempt to mount two TVs either next to or one above the other.
Will you go full?
I can make two work.
Will you go full Ari Wasserman and have somebody install them for you, or will you give it the old college try?
Well, in this current rental house, there was already the hanging brackets or whatever on the wall. The mount already existed on the wall, but my brother-in-law and I physically lifted the TV and mounted and secured it. So we did half of it.
Half of it.
So if that counts for anything, I will gladly let somebody else do that work. I am capable. I'll let somebody else do it. I don't know.
Final question. Final question from David.
Yeah.
What would the Shohei Ohtani of college football look like?
By the way, can I just put one last thing on the end of that?
Please.
I used to not prefer and get kind of annoyed at going to a sports bar to watch games, but I have missed human contact so much.
Yeah.
That if you told me, if a friend of mine, I don't know when the next NBA Finals game is, but if somebody invited me to go see an NBA Finals game and there was a basket of tots and some sort of attractive dipping sauce, I'd be really friggin' pumped about it.
All right. Final question. Sorry. Who is the Ohtani? Or no, what does the Ohtani of college football look like? So Shohei Ohtani is a combination of like that we've never really seen in Major League Baseball. He's a pitcher and also he hits really well and like leads Major League Baseball in home runs at the All-Star break. What is that combination like in college football?
Almost unheard of historically, right? Like Mike Hampton could kind of hit, right?
But not like this.
Not like this. And then Babe Ruth. But then he gave up pitching.
So what David is asking is the Ohtani equivalent in college football, somebody who is a quarterback and kicker, an offensive lineman and cornerback, is it something we'll ever see? So it's got to be a guy who plays more than one position on a regular basis. I don't know if we'll ever see it in this current iteration of college football, although it was hard to predict that we would ever see an Ohtani to begin with. So it's hard to say. I think the combination has to be a quarterback with a linebacker.
Which we saw that flip, right, with Maryland a few years ago. A linebacker was the emergency quarterback.
We've seen the flip. We saw the Chaz Surratt quarterback to linebacker flip.
But not in the same game. We saw Joel Lanning.
So we see that a lot.
It's not unprecedented, but they're not doing it concurrently.
There are comparable skills being the quarterback of the offense and the quarterback of the defense.
Right.
So I guess the next layer here would be somebody who could do it both in the same game or both in the same season.
Let me throw this at you. What about a quarterback/defensive coordinator? Because I only say that because there's no physical element to being the defensive coordinator, but it's a highly specialized role within the game.
Whereas we saw
Miles Jack, same game, play linebacker and take carries. We've seen two-way players. We've seen Charles Woodson as a starting defensive back come in. And I mean, he was in the return game, which is not unusual, but he took some sweeps and, you know, lined up at receiver and won a Heisman for it. So I suppose in reality, in practice, Charles Woodson has been the closest we've come to a top level player, but he was not the best or one of the four best receivers in the country. He was a defensive back who lined up at receiver and who returned kicks, you know, at times really well. But it would have to be somebody, because I understand where he's coming from the offensive line and corner, where physically they're so different and so unusual, but I don't think that's living necessarily in reality, size-wise.
Right. I mean, we're talking about, if we look at Ohtani's batting stats in particular, 33 home runs, 70 RBIs at the break, hitting 279 with a on-base percentage of 364. So that's a monster season. Monster season by any measure.
Yeah.
In baseball. And then if you compare the fact that he can also pitch, Now, you know, I mean, let's take a look at his stats here. This is a guy, he's got a pretty low whip. He's got a mid-3 ERA in the American League, which is pretty good. 67 innings pitched, 87 strikeouts. So he can throw and he can strike guys out. He can do a little bit of everything here. To have a guy who is that consistent on both sides or in two different aspects of baseball is really unheard of. And so I think it would have to be an odd combination in football. One of the suggestions was quarterback and kicker, which would be interesting. That I think is attainable. I don't know if it's...
I'm not as impressed. Was that what Sammy Baugh did, I believe?
I think so.
Maybe I'm making that up. Yeah. I'm not as impressed with a quarterback kicker. To me, the answer is actually because if the quarterback is the analog to the pitcher in that, like, it's the most cerebral position, right? Are we assuming that?
Or catcher would be most cerebral, but...
Okay. Whatever. You're in your head more with pitcher. You're in more, the ball is in your hand deciding the game in the same way, pitcher and quarterback.
Right.
I think it's quarterback and edge rusher.
Okay.
I think there is that distinct difference between, right, you're attacking in both instances what you do on the other side of the ball. So you know the ins and outs of the position. If you're a slugger, you know the ins and outs of what a pitcher is going to do and how to react to a pitch. So that to me is probably it. If Von Miller were a Heisman caliber quarterback, if Trevor Lawrence had 17 and a half tackles for a loss in a season, that is probably the closest I can come up with, because the skill set is so different but also related. So,
right,
you know, if Vic Beasley is a Heisman quarterback, if, you know, I'm trying to think of every, you know, if Aaron Donald is a quarterback, I mean, he's not edge, but, you know, that kind of thing to me is the only thing where you are in the trenches on one side of the ball, probably on defense attacking, and then on the other side of the ball, you are picking apart a defense.
Yeah,
I
was going to go back to your Charles Woodson bit, and I was going to say, if a receiver came along who was also a shutdown corner.
Yeah, but those things feel related. They're playing the pass.
They're very related.
They're battling each other every play, and so you see a lot of crossover. Wasn't there? It was a Patriots player who started lining up a corner. Was it Troy Brown?
Right.
Remember,
Troy Brown.
What I'm talking
I think it was
about?
Troy Brown.
Troy Brown. Yeah. So it is. Those are
That's
least
a great
related.
Question.
Yeah, I would say if you look at the great edge rushers, you know, if it's Myles Garrett, if those guys are at quarterback, and I've said this before on the show, the first time I ever saw Cam Newton in person, he was on the sidelines. It was the Florida-Tennessee game 2008. And I just walked by a dude who looked like a god. And I was like, man, that dude is going to destroy some quarterback. And it turned out he was the quarterback.
When I saw
so it's
Cam
going
Newton,
to be somebody built like that.
When I saw Cam Newton in person, I thought he was wearing shoulder pads.
Yeah.
He was not wearing.
So it's going to be, you know, if Terrell Pryor were an edge rusher, where you're like, geez, man, this dude is another guy.
Oh.
That is the closest I could come up with just because the skill set is so different.
Ohtani, by the way, making only $5.5 million this year. So maybe that'll change sometime
soon. You ever seen the clip of Mina Kimes, who is a Mariners fan? Like the cameras were rolling ahead of an Around the Horn episode when she found out that Ohtani signed with the Angels, and she was crushed. Just absolutely demolished.
Yeah. Well, this is the first year that I feel like we're seeing the legend of Ohtani. You know, it's always been there and he's always been able to do these things, but what he's done this season is just remarkable. Absolutely remarkable.
Let's rifle. You ready to rifle?
Let's rifle real quick.
Favorite wedding song to hear as a guest. When it comes on, you're like, this is me.
Living on a Prayer.
I want to dance with somebody, Whitney Houston. Sneaky Huevo, how often do you try and exercise?
How often do I try to exercise versus how much do I exercise?
What is your living in reality exercise schedule?
It is non-existent. It's walking the dogs, but hopefully now that
that's exercise.
I am,
no, that's exercise. How long of a walk?
About a mile.
Okay. So you're doing a mile a day? A couple miles a day?
Two times a day, usually.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's
hopefully
exercise.
More
that
now
counts.
That I'm no longer at the MDJ.
I'm at 3 or 4 days a week, a couple days of tennis, a couple runs, and I'm pretty happy with it. What were Dan and Ty's first words to their wives?
Could not tell you.
Jimmy.
Could not tell you.
You were coworkers.
Solid wife Kate tells me that my art of flirtation, my art of, getting to know her, getting her interest was one of total avoidance. So
advanced beyond anybody's comprehension.
Yeah. So I can't honestly tell you what my first words were.
You played hard to get with your wife.
But it was like saying that I played anything gives me too much credit. There was no like tactic. It
Who's
was just
that mysterious tie.
Yeah. Yeah.
So mysterious. Mine was go blue as in Michigan I don't know if that's the exact phrasing because we met online and in her profile, it said go blue. And so that was my icebreaker
go
because
blue.
That was something I could talk about.
Nice. All right. Final question. So, what's the final question?
Final question. We did exercise. We did wedding. We did wife question. Okay. Here it is. Zane, this is a great way to answer because it straddles both football and not really college football. Besides the broadcasters, is there anything to you that makes a game's broadcast stand out?
Wow. Well, I know the answer for you is the bug at the bottom or the graphics. That's gotta be your answer, right?
Not in a good way. I assume he wants to know what in a good way makes a broadcast really shine. Not a bad score bug or belt, as it were, with ESPN.
Makes a broadcast really shine outside of the commentators. Wow, that is a good question.
I've got a great tie answer here
ahead.
I think would work for you. I think it's the audio mix where there's like the palpable feel and energy of being in a stadium now that, you know, surround sound and good sound bars are pretty affordable. I think a lot of people have those. And so it's a more immersive experience, especially after last year when a lot of these stadiums were far emptier than normal. So the audio mix, I think, is really important. And I've been behind the scenes to watch somebody, and he was an artist, sort of work the levels. I think that's very important. I think any sort of immersive quality. So the what's it called? The wire cam that's behind a play, that like, even when it's not behind a play, even when it's, you know, sort of behind a huddle or on the sideline as a coach is like struggling with a decision whether or not to go on third and one or something like that. The close-ups, which I believe Fox does more close-ups than ESPN. They're really big on like the emotion of the game. And to me, specific for college, is just painting a picture. I get aroused when I see the changing colors in a Big Ten game. I get aroused when I see the Vol Navy. I get aroused, like anything that paints the picture and paints a scene of that game. If I'm coming back from a break and it's not a meaningless, but like an inconsequential Wisconsin-Indiana game or something that doesn't, you know, they're both 3-5, but I'm seeing brats on the grill. I'm seeing scenes in the parking lot. I'm seeing the crowd jump around between the third and fourth quarter. It's anything that's like, this couldn't be happening anywhere else, this scene. That to me separates a pretty good broadcast, you know, and a lot of that's the capability and the producer and what kind of shots they want and how they want to broadcast a game. But sort of time and place to me is very big and very important.
Yeah, I think.
And by the way, with broadcasters, the really good ones don't over talk. They'll let the sort of sounds of the game tell the story. That's important.
I think the thing for me is you alluded to like the wire cam. Some of us are old enough to remember when the wire cam was only trotted out for something like Monday Night Football or the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't as ubiquitous as it is now. So for me, the wire cam, when I see that, like, I don't know, that gives it more of a big game feel to me. And I would also jump aboard the atmosphere thing that you alluded to, you know, seeing the atmosphere, sure, knowing that it's a big game, knowing that it's in a cool setting. That's pretty cool. You know, those shots of the mountains surrounding the Rose Bowl, that adds to the feel, man. If you don't see that, you don't have a heart.
But that's the top of the top of the top of college football to me in terms of visuals. It can exist anywhere. It can exist at an FCS school. It can exist at a mid-level Power 5 school, at a good G, whatever. As long as it's not in an NFL stadium, I am pretty pumped up about just seeing where this game is happening. And maybe it's just commercial bumpers. Maybe it's on the faces of, you know, a notable fan section or something like that. Whatever it is. But to have to like, to immediately visually associate a game with a place is extremely important to me. It's the people, it's the scene, it's outside the stadium, it's inside the stadium. And by the way, weather.
Mm.
Like a snowy game, a rainy game, a sweltering game, a foggy game, that kind of thing. If those things are emphasized, you know, those close-up shots of the puddles on the sideline,
I love
all of that, Ty. Give it all to me.
You're into it. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, look, this has been a longer than usual show, but one that has been more fun than usual and certainly more momentous perhaps than ever before.
Go
on out to verballers.com for those of you interested in supporting our growing venture here with the Solid Verbal. Verballers.com and our Patreon is the easiest way, the quickest way that you can do that.
By the way, the Patreon's been fact-checking you.
They've been fact-checking me great.
Well, you said West Virginia was a buffer on TCU's schedule. They've lost 3 of 4, including a really ugly loss last year to West Virginia.
Okay.
Somebody said most omelet stations, the guy is only working, guy or gal, 2 omelets at a time. And you said you were good for 5 with no experience.
I can do then, five. I stand by that.
Okay.
Five then, pans, four omelets. I stand by
that. I saw this morning, did Ty Hildenbrandt say that he knew people that would be happy with a 3:30 half marathon? That's a 16-minute mile pace.
Okay. That's all. Maybe that's I got all. My...
But you can be
up.
A part of this community fact-checking ties, what
you
I'm
be,
saying.
You can be, look, I've had a lot going on this week, so I beg your forgiveness for bowlers.com if you are interested in further supporting the show, if you are interested in getting more of the nitty-gritty on the Mysterious Day Job. Show drops Friday morning, 6 a.m. Again, our new Patreon benefit tiers are live at noon on today, Thursday the 15th.
I only have one more thing, Ty.
Yeah.
And then we can sign off. Friend of the show, co-host of Big Boy Bets, Jeff Schwartz, texted me. He obviously listened to the Q&A episode. The Stanford tree does have a name. El Palo Alto.
El Palo Alto.
As in Palo Alto.
Hmm.
The tree is said to represent El Palo Alto. The redwood tree that is the official symbol of Palo Alto, California, where Stanford is situated. It's a redwood.
Dan, this has been a fun show. Long time coming.
Fun show.
Long time
I'm so
coming.
Excited. I'm so excited.
To great things ahead, to working more with you, to continuing to build out this little thing we started over a decade ago. I'm excited. Hope everyone out there is as well. For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrandt, we'll catch you all on the flip side. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace. Full day job show. Verballers.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.